In season two of The Sneak, a podcast from For the Win and USA Today, we will tell the story of surfing champion Jack Roland Murphy, who in 1964 pulled a heist that made him the most famous jewel thief in the country. But that was just the beginning of his story, one that quickly spun out of control and then turned deadly. The Sneak, Murders at Whiskey Creek, is available now on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Or experience the entire series right now, ad-free, exclusively on Wondery Plus. Download the Wondery app and hear all of Season 2 today.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman. The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter. Now, Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
Welcome to The Counter, everybody. I'm Chris Corman of For the Win, joined as always by Stephen Ruiz. We are the NFL team here to look ahead at week 11. We also have a special guest, one of our favorite fellow podcasters, Twitter personalities, just smart football person, Coach Vass. We are going to get to him pretty quickly. But Stephen, tell me how you're feeling about the NFL right now, the COVID situation. What's your thoughts?
I mean, I'm at the point where I'm just like not paying attention to it just because it's so like depressing.
The numbers keep spiking everywhere. The number of players who are sidelined or have contacts or whatever, it's really getting hard to keep track of it. So, the NFL, as we've said, show after show after show now for the last few weeks, has made the decision just to plow through. And, we're crossing our fingers that somehow football gets played and people don't get sick. So good luck with that. All right, we're going to jump to Coach Vass right now. Coach Vass is a former high school football coach. He hosts the Make Defense Great Again podcast and has a Patreon site that you should check out. I mean, he's got a website that has all sorts of stuff that you should. You know, if you are really interested in understanding football, this is a place to start. This is the sort of place that, quite frankly, we go to try to figure out football.
And I steal all my ideas for articles from his podcast. By the way, we steal it.
We steal it and make it so that people who are everyone can understand it. We try to translate it. And he is here to talk a little bit about defense and some of the trends he's seen. We're going to dig in on analytics, his view of some of the advanced metrics that are being used to talk about football now. But I want to start with something that Stephen wrote this week. And he looked at the Seahawks and their difficulties against the Los Angeles Rams. And basically Stephen, I'll let you talk about this a little bit, but the thesis here is that the Seahawks have gone ahead and listened. We doubt that they actually listened to Twitter, but they have done what Twitter called for, and they let Russ cook. They are letting Russell Wilson throw the ball on early downs more than any other team in the league. And the Rams just said, okay, we're going to defend the pass on early downs. And the Seahawks did not switch back to running the ball, and the Rams beat them. Is that basically the sort of summarization of your article, Stephen?
Yeah, I think the larger point, doesn't really have anything to do with the Seahawks or the Rams. It's just that this kind of exposes a flaw in how analytics people have kind of tackled this problem of what the ideal run pass ratio would be on first and second down. Like, yes, it's more efficient to pass and it's more efficient to pass on first down, but there's a certain point where if you're running too, or you're passing too much, then defenses no longer have to treat those downs like they would normally treat an early down against another team that runs at a league average rate. Now they could treat those early downs like third down, and they could, throw out more exotic fronts. They could pressure you. They could do more coverage things. And all of a sudden you're not throwing against base defense and spot drop cover three. You're going up against, these sub packages. And I think that's a problem that analytics people have, like, just generally, is not being able to see all of the different factors that determine whether a play is efficient. I know they try to do that, but it's just so hard to do with football. Like, you can't look at early play our early down play calling without accounting for how the defense is defending it. And that's why EPA on third down is basically the same as a running play on first down, because defenses are expecting it.
Right. Coach Vass, what do you think? I mean, does this surprise you that defenses have adjusted a little bit? And is this a sort of chess match that we see in football? Like, you know, how does this hit you when you hear Steven making these observations?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show, guys. Looking forward to it. A lot of fun. The thing that I see is anytime you are too stubborn and you're trying to force something, this is what's going to happen. And coaches always talk about, especially on the offensive side of the ball, you know, we're going to take what they give us. Well, I saw some of the fronts that the Rams were running, and that's not the case. And I've watching stuff like what the Seahawks did, especially after knowing their history, you know, you see stuff where, you know, these guys are trying to shoehorn something in, and the teams are just basically taking their stubbornness one way or the other and using it against them. I mean, it's, you know, I think you said daring to run, and they were. I mean, the Rams lined up. It looked like the end of the game, like a 2-minute situation. And if you don't have the ability to check into a run, you're just going to let Russ cook or whatever the hell that means. you know, that's what you're going to get. And so I've coached against teams where coaches have said, this is what we're going to do. This is who we are. And we're going to pump our chests out. And okay, well, we're going to make you do what you don't want to do. And so I think to come out and say, we're going to throw on first down, we're going to run on first down, I think it's stupid. I think you would like to have, like, you want to plot your course, but you also want to be able to see, you know, hey, they're in a light box. I mean, that's why Peyton Manning was so good. And I know there's not many like him mentally, physically, all that stuff, like putting that whole package together. But he was so selfless that so many times those runs in the red zone, they were passes called. But he looked at the defense and he said, hey, I got a shot here. And he'd hand the ball off. And you have to be able to do that. It's cool to want to do something. Man, I've gone into games where we're going to zero blitz these guys, whatever. But if it ain't working, you're just banging your head against the wall. And teams, and a lot of times it's going to be who's the most patient.
Right. I'm so fascinated by just the game planning process. And I'm wondering, what are the different things you're taking into consideration when you're game planning for first down, let's say, and then third down?
I'm sorry. In what sense?
Like, how does the threat of the run on first down change how you have to call plays compared to on third down, when you pretty much know you're going to get a pass if you're in an obvious passing situation?
Oh, so I'm one of these guys. I don't think I would do well in the NFL because, well, for a lot of reasons, but one of them related to this conversation is that we're at least gap sound in everything that we do. Because I saw, especially I used to study the old Rex Ryan stuff where the shade nose to the field is containing to the boundary and some of those things. But that was when the league was littered with the Mannings, the Bradys. Those guys are gone. Mm-hmm. Oh, Brian, that's not true. Brady's still there. But, you know, you're seeing these new age quarterbacks that can run more and can use their legs on third down. So I think that kind of is a starting place for me is I think that the old model of, hey, we're just going to rush lanes and, you know, have our rush lanes on the quarterback, with all the things that they can do and some of the schematic things that are out there, I think teams are leaving themselves shorthanded. And I think that's why you're seeing some different concepts coming into play, especially with, you know, how the Titans were playing a lot of Tampa too, where it gave them another level on third down to be able to bring a creeper where you're rushing a non-traditional a rusher and you're dropping a traditional guy on the line of scrimmage, but you're still having eyes on the quarterback and you have a fifth guy underneath to be able to come out of coverage and go play in the quarterback. Now on first down, so that's where I would start from, because a lot of people say, oh, you know, we don't worry about that, those things on third down. I think you have to. Now on first down, I mean, if you're doing the traditional, hey, they're going to run the ball on first down and throw play action. And oh, by the way, if you line up with your corners off of the quick kick, we're going to throw a hitch or something.
Right.
I mean, I think you need to be able to get whatever you need to be able to get. Eight guys in the box. And when I say eight guys in the box, I'm doing air quotes. So sure. Eight guys in the box, if they're in a 21 personnel look with two backs and a tight end, a seven man box, if they're in 11 personnel with a tight end and three receivers, and then a six man box, if they're in a four wide look. So you're gapped out inside. I think that you need to be in a position where, you know, you have edge defenders. And that's one good thing about the NFL is, because you don't see a lot of true off-tackle power running game, your ends aren't – so a lot of times when you get those type of run schemes, your ends have to come down hard and try to spill the ball outside, mm-hmm. and that's when they get you on boots. And I think because you see more wide zone running where – I can't believe they call it a wide zone. Wow, I feel fancy. I usually call it stretch or outside zone. I am an NFL guy now. Sign my ass Sean up. McVay. Sign my ass up. Now,
Sean McVay, you know, just hired you.
Now, I can remember all the opponent's players too that I just played. What a joke. Anyway, but I think that you're able to play with a wider net where you're not – you know, at some lower levels where you get right. those hard play actions, those boots, those guys are knifing down inside and you're having to contain with a linebacker. So, I mean, it's basic in that sense. I think that you want to be able to create some movement up front. I think that you want to be able to, you know, defense, this is going to sound corny, but it's true. Defense, you're presenting an argument. You're saying, okay, this is how we're going to play. We see what you're doing. We are lining up in this way. We are playing in this way. You are going to make them play left hand. All the BS coachisms that you've always heard. Mm-hmm. Take what the way they want to do best. Make them play left handed. Get them behind the sticks. All that stuff.
I thought only Belichick does that. He's the only one that gets credit for that.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's another thing. That's like, what? You know, you want to get them, you're basically laying an argument out. And you're saying, okay, this is what we're going to take away. This is what we think you do well. And that's one of the cool things about football is you don't need to talk to the defensive coordinator and be like, hey, what do you think? What was your plan there? You can see it. Mm-hmm. Hey, they're in a solid front, which is you're putting a guy outside the guard, outside the tackle, and outside the tight end. I have an over front. Okay, well, you think that you don't need to talk to Wade Phillips or whatever to know that they think you're going to run the ball to the tight end, how they're lined up.
Right.
And so you're basically saying, this is what we're going to take away. This is what you're allowed to have because there's obviously no perfect defense. And then have traps late. So, okay, we know what we're giving up. And we're going to be sitting on that. We know that you know where you can go, and we're going to be ready to take that stuff away. And I think that's where some coordinators get in trouble in the NFL is they try to defend everything at once. Right. And you never, I mean, I shouldn't have brought this up because I don't know the number, but you know, if you break down the passing zones on the field, like if you go those old school, like offensive playbooks where it has the passing zones, there's like 12, 14 zones. Well, there's only seven defenders. You know, you can't have somebody in every zone. So there's always going to be something weak. And then if you have too many in the zones, then you're going to be weak up front. And so, you have to present those things, but I think guys get in trouble when they're worried about everything and you can't, you have to, when I called defense, I tried to make it turn into rock, paper, scissors. So I was creating a moving target, not we're going to sit in the same thing. That's what drives me crazy about some of these guys in the league that make all this money and they play freaking over cover three. I'm like, I could do that.
Who are some coaches that you think, some defensive coordinators that you think are doing it right and that you are interested to see what they do each week? I know you're not watching a ton of NFL film, but who are the guys that if you were to emulate, who would that be?
If you would have asked me 5-10 years ago, like Spagnuolo would have been a guy that I like, but yeah, I haven't watched him closely in a while. Obviously the Belichick guys, I've always liked. I know I'm going to get a ton of crap for this, but Matt Patricia, I think his ideas are good on defense. I just don't think he has the dudes to do it.
I'm with you on the ideas are good. I was an early fan of Matt Patricia. Like some of the other stuff, like how he manages the locker room, like hasn't really turned out well.
He's an insane person.
Right.
But I don't think that makes him. That doesn't make him not a good defensive coach or right. good defensive ideas. I mean, Bill Belichick got fired too. I mean, that's what some of the hyperbolic react. And I get it. Football is an emotional sport, and I used to be much more emotional about it. But you know, I tell the story on my podcast sometimes. You know, I was a student at the University of Miami. I grew up in Orlando. I loved the Dolphins growing up. Well, I graduate college, and within 2 years, you know, I'd class with Vince Wilfork, and he became a friend of mine. We stayed in touch for a couple of years and then kind of fizzled out. One of my buddies at Miami gets hired by the Bills as a scout. And then I go work at San Jose State, and one of my best friends gets drafted by the Jets. Well, and I don't have any connection to the Dolphin personally besides liking them growing up. Yeah. And it's a different game when your friends, you know, a Dave Phipp, who's the special teams coach for the Eagles. You know, he was with me at San Jose State, and he goes to the Niners, and everybody's like, fire the coaches. And he just had a baby and, you know, was an assistant mm-hmm. special teams coach. You look at things differently. And I know that's not fun. Like, I'm like the guy poo-pooing on the internet. Like, hey, these guys have families and stuff. And so it's hard for me to, you know, get out the pitchforks and the citronella candles. Tiki torches. You got that one. You know, and like, fire these people or they're stupid. Like, do you really honestly think Matt Patricia got dumber since he was at New England?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, maybe you could say, well, he had ideas and that Bill would check him where now he's the boss. But do you think he got dumber? Do you think he just all of a sudden just got stupid? You know what I mean? And so
he also had Bill Belichick putting together the roster. So, you know,
that's true. That's true. But the ideas of what you're doing, maybe that's where it's incompatible. And then that makes you a bad defensive coordinator. Like, who's the better defensive coordinator? The guy who plays vanilla because he has great players and he can let him play, or the guy that does a bunch of crazy stuff but doesn't have the roster for it?
Right.
But, you know, and I don't know what the Patriots have done. I'm going to do a little cross promo here. But yeah, I don't know what the Patriots have done lately, but I talked to Dean Pease on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he said when he and Cornell were there, Belichick only spent like 45 minutes with them. Right. And the rest of the time, he just followed Tom Brady around and taught him the opposing defense, which I was absolutely stunned when he said that.
Yeah, we stole that for our show. We did like an entire show on that.
Oh, awesome. All right, well then you guys already know about that. But that's where you know, some of those guys, those are two of my favorites. Obviously, I would go back and watch some of the Pease stuff.
Pease is awesome.
Yeah. I liked him. Wink Martindale I like a lot. I like exotic fun. I like to play man-to-man when I can. And so I need the exotic, you know, walk 5-6 people up. The cover zero stuff takes a little bit of the air out of my lungs when I see that. I get a little nervous. And this is coming from the guy who used to run it all the time. But so Brian Flores, those guys. But that's – I tend to gravitate towards that. Rushing 4 and playing cover 3 is just – I've never really liked cover 3. I know it has its place. But growing up, we never, you know, growing up in coaching, I always worked for guys that hated it. So I tend to stay away from that stuff. Not that it's not good.
Speaking of Dean Pease, I have a question related to the Titans. And it's not related to the Titans, just generally speaking. But they lost Dean Pease this last offseason. He retired. And the defense has just taken a massive step back, especially on third down, which I think is where Dean Pease really is at his best. But it seems like they're running the same system. I'm just wondering, like, the transition from you lose this coach who's calling the plays, but you still have the same system. Like, why isn't it working as well as it did last year? Like, how important is that play calling part of it?
Okay, well, I'm going to say this as an uneducated guess. Okay, so I just want to make sure. I don't want any hate. I've seen some of the tweets y'all get. I don't want any of that smoke. I'm happy living in my little high school coaches, college coaches bubble over here. Here's what I think happened. And I do not, this is not from Dean. This is not from his son, Matt, like guys I've become friends with. This is just my guess.
Okay.
I think that when you have a guy like Dean Pease, you know that he's good for, his brain is good for stopping 3 to 7 points a game. You know what I mean? And I think that sometimes you can be overvalued and all of a sudden, well, we've got DMPs, maybe not overvalued. I shouldn't say that. You're valued. And so, hey guys, we got DMPs. He'll make chicken salad out of, you know what? So let's put our guys on offense, or let's do this stuff on offense, or let's give the players the offense, or let's be creative. Now you lose a guy like Pease. A system is only as good as a naming convention.
Right.
I've seen it's a language. It's not a set of plays. Like, I know, like, here's a good one. You know, Wink Martindale worked for Dean Pease of the Ravens. He changed a lot of the language stuff after Dean left, but and ran similar stuff. But so was that a system change or no? I mean, I've also seen guys come from an external factor, a team from another team or whatever, overhaul the system, air quotes, and run basically the same stuff with different naming. So is that a system change? Yes. But would you consider the Martindale system change? Well, no. Well, why? Because he was there. Like, what, you know, where's the line?
Right.
I know that the Titans got some good pass rushers, or they thought they were good pass rushers. And so I think maybe that they're not as creative as they were. That's the only thing I can think of, because I've watched them recently and I've watched them last year, and it seemed like Dean was more creative. And so maybe it's like, oh, we got these dudes. Let's let them go. Let's let them cook, as one might say. And I think that sometimes, like, when guys lose their underdog status, they tend to just do what they do, quote unquote.
Right.
And my whole thing is, like, if you have average players and you're doing things well and you're being creative and it's working, why would you stop being creative? Wouldn't it work even better if you had really good players?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, why? And I don't know what that's a product of. I don't know. I don't know anything about the inner workings of the Titans. That's all I saw, and all I can think of is possibly the problem. Because, like I said, the system is a language. And so, you know, you could have two guys in the same system that run it completely differently.
Right.
And I mean, think about the West Coast offense. How many different iterations of it have there been? And guys that, you know, Bill Walsh said, we can't go in the shotgun. Well, you know, think about all the guys that have gone in the gun. You know what I mean?
Andy Reid and Shanahan are nothing alike.
Right. Well, and you can see that because they're of different generations, right?
Right.
But look at Gruden and Andy Reid. They came out around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Andy's a little older than John, but they're more of a, I think that's more of a like for like comparison.
Right.
I mean, that's where you see the differences. And so I've seen countless times, look at the Saban defenses. I mean, if you look at, this is something I study a lot of, if you look at Nick versus, you know, Nick at Alabama versus Kirby versus Tennessee versus a guy like Will Muschamp, who hasn't been with, you know, Coach Saban in 15 years, Kevin Steele at Auburn, they all worked for him. They all Auburn runs a lot of the same stuff that Alabama does. Florida, Todd Grantham is Wade Phillips to two backs and Nick Saban to one back with his own flavor in it. Like, but they're completely different. And so, I mean, it's funny, my old school. So both last two schools I've been at are running my defenses, my system, my language. Sarah was basically the same exact system, you know, but it's two different personalities. So
Right. Sorry.
And if you want to cut this part, I've been I'm going long on this, so I apologize.
No problem. One thing that stood out to me when I was listening to the Dean Pease podcast was something he said about when he liked to run the simulated pressures. And he was like, I think it was like third and long, basically. Like, and he was like, I'm not going to run it on third and four because then they could just, you know, throw it underneath, like attack those vacated zones. And then I was watching the Titans Steelers game and the Titans were basically like blitzing. I don't know. I was watching on TV, so I couldn't really tell what they were doing behind it, but they were playing a lot of soft zones behind these blitzes and just giving, and Ben was just like taking those 4 yard gains and getting first downs. And that really stood out to me as the difference between what they were doing last year and what they're doing now. I don't know.
Right.
Maybe I'm off base.
I mean, some of it's strategy. I think, again, you know, just because it's third and four, teams may attack it differently. Like, we play teams, you know, teams that I've game planned college and high school, where no matter what they were going to do, if it was a certain down and distance between third and 7-11, they were going to throw stuff at the sticks. They were aiming for the sticks. Mm-hmm. And then we saw teams that would throw 4-yard routes and try to get it with, you know, the yards after the catch. And then we'd see guys that would try to push the ball down the field 15 yards. And I'm like, dude, you only need 8. Like, what are you doing? So I think that can factor in. There's just so many factors. And, you know, we're talking about analytics before, but there's so many factors that go into these sort of things that it's hard to pinpoint one. I think you can get a piece of it. Like, oh, this maybe is the reason why.
Yeah,
it may be that they didn't know it was third and four. They thought it was third and eight. I mean, I've seen crazier stuff. You think like, I mean, this is the coaching, calling defense in the National Football League is a lot harder than people think. And the pressure that you're under, the amount of factors you have to figure out in 4 seconds, 5 seconds, the information you have to take in while filtering out other information and other noise. It's kind of crazy. Like, after games, I'm like, oh my God, like, I feel like I get hit by a bus. And I mean, nobody cared if we won or lost. So, yeah, I can't imagine with some of the Twitter warriors out there coming after your ass, you know.
That's one of the things we were, because our show, we're trying to use analytics in a smart way. We're trying to use film in a smart way and trying to find sort of this common ground to really understand what we should be taking from these things. So I wonder, you know, you actually are the one making the decisions, you know, or were the one making the decisions when you were coaching, that you had to figure those things out. And I don't know how much you used analytics or looked at the things that they were teaching us, but what have you seen from your point of view, you know, how people look at the game now, having analytics and having more film study? What are we still missing? I mean, what are we getting wrong when we observe football from our viewpoint? Because it feels like we're much smarter, but I'm sure that you think, you know, from a coach's standpoint, there are still so many things we're missing.
So the main thing, and that's a great question, by the way, the main thing that I see, and I just want to start off, and I always say this, I am not an expert. I do not have all the answers. This is one man's opinion of from why what I've seen and your experiences shape you. So I'm going to give you that perspective. I think that is important to say to not only inform your listeners about what I'm about to say, but it also is kind of like a nod to the analytics community. Like, listen, this is a piece of the information. Context is so important. When you are a team with a good defense and your offense is not explosive and you're playing an explosive offense, throwing the ball around the yard, although it may increase the EPA or whatever the hell that stuff is. And, you know, I don't want to poo-poo the analytics because I think there's some good stuff to come out of it. But there's very few pieces that can really affect decision-making. And I'm not talking about down and distance tendencies, stuff like that. That part of it. But like some of these data sets and whatnot, like, you know, I think we can agree that throwing the football is more efficient than running the football on average, right? Mm-hmm. Well, sure. But here's the problem. That incomplete pass, and if you're trying to play a team, if you're trying to play Pat Mahomes, you know, where in the analytics does it wait that running the football takes 40 seconds off the clock? And now that's 40 seconds he's not on the field. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think that it doesn't, and it's hard. And I think that's why nobody's figured it out yet. I don't think you'll ever figure it out. I mean, anytime, you know, football is the most coactive sport that I know of on the planet, meaning,
right,
everybody is linked. And you know, the whole thing you tell your kids starting in Pop Warner, do your 1-11th. One guy messes up, like the left guard messes up and blows the protection. It could be the greatest play ever designed, but it's a sack, you know? And so trying to put a number, a numeric value, if you do A, B, C, D, then E will happen on a game with that many variables. It's hard, you know. And then I think sometimes, you know, the analytics community has been right about some things. Going forward on fourth and short was kind of something that kind of opened the door for analytics. I think people started realizing, oh, that's really good, you know, and then it kind of validated them. But I think they start getting ahead of themselves. Like I just want to say this, I love the analytics guys, especially the guys on Twitter. They're great. And we talked about this during the pre-interview. I would rather have the analytics guys sit there and be wrong about something or something that I think they're wrong about trying to push the game forward than listen to, you know, Billy Jackass on ESPN going, well, you know, when Todd Gurley rushes for 25 yards, the Rams are 15-0. Like, you know, so at least they're trying to move right. that game in that direction. Right. But like, I see stuff like momentum doesn't matter. Really? Momentum doesn't matter. You mean to tell me that everything in the history of psychology that you've ever been seen when it comes to performance is wrong because my EPOE over DVOA model says that it's not? Like, stick it up your ass. Like, that's where I'm just like, okay. And I know, like, and here's the thing, and I don't want to pull this card because I don't want to sound like a douchebag, but I know these players. I know some of these NFL players. I know a ton of college players. I used to coach in college. And I know that they're saying, well, it's the pros, it's professional. What does that matter? Motivation, it is harder to motivate a guy that makes $9 million a year and that is guaranteed to make that much money unless he just really screws up than it is a college kid trying to make it to the NFL.
Right.
You know what I mean? And to think, and in college, yeah, you have distractions, sure. But when you're in the NFL, you got babies. You've got mamas. Sometimes you got baby mamas. You've got agents. You have a lot of different people coming at you. Snakes in the grass trying to get your money for the latest and hottest MLM marketing trend. Like, there's a lot of distractions out there. So don't tell me, oh, these guys just got to be professionals. I mean, you see it in all sorts of sports. And if you don't think pressure or momentum or self-doubt creeps in, you're out of your mind. I don't give a shit what the data says. I'm sorry. Like, that is, you're going to try to take the human emotion and condition out of sports. And the other thing is, what does it all mean? I see these debates about who's the true best quarterback. Who cares? Like, who gives a shit? Like, I listen, I know in the media, and if I know that there's a push to have takes. That's how you get known. And sometimes it's just fun to mess with people. Like, Skip Bayless has made an entire career out of it.
That guy's rich because of it, man.
Exactly. That idiot now that's taken over the MAGA country, Clay Travis.
Yeah.
The guy that used to work for Al Gore. You know, anyway, I mean, there's money in that. There's controversy. It gets a conversation. If we all agree on everything, it'd be really terrible sports talk radio. I get it. Or podcast. I'm in a different world because mine's educational. So, like, that's counterproductive to what we're, you know, like, it's entertaining because it's educational in my, you know, in my world. I could develop, I could do a pod through a tin can and a string and people would listen if I was talking to Wade Phillips. You know what I mean? But I think some of these debates on who's the best and it's, what does it matter? How is that affecting real decisions in the NFL? You know, and I think it's fun to talk about, but being fun to talk about, or what does it matter if you're fifth in PFS rankings versus eighth? Like, what does that matter? Like, just, you know what I mean? Like, it's cool to talk about and it's cool to have these listicles, but like, I'll say this. I had a friend reach out, works in the SEC, that wants to do he wants to do analytics for coaches. And so I reached out to some of these guys and I said, you know, how could we make the, because my whole thing has always been trying to figure out behavioral predictor models. Like, how can we, what data do we need? How can we put into a system to get the most likely outcome of what this guy's about to do? Because really for me in my world, predictive behavior is the only thing I care about.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do all these, you know, studies and you know, if then analysis. But the problem is, if you're not careful, you're chained to that data. And so I would be in games when I was younger and I'm calling defense and I'm like, well, they're 71% pass on first down. Like, here, like going back to the original part of the conversation, they're 71% pass. I better get in a wide nine and jet up the field. P.S. The first six downs, they ran the ball versus us. Like, I'm not trusting what's in front of my eyes. I'm trusting what's, because they're coaching too. They're doing self-analysis too. So they probably saw that. Hey, we're 71% pass that on first. Vass is very reactive. Let's run the ball on first down. And they're laughing as I'm staring at them. Where's my data sheet? Oh my God. You know, like, so that's what matters to me as a coach. Other than that, it's entertainment, you know, and there are some things like I've looked at some of the data that some of these companies like PFF is great. They do data analysis and I've seen what they provide to some of the colleges and I think the service they provide, but I don't know how much of that affects decision-making. It's like cool broadcast stuff, like little tidbits and interesting nuggets, but it's like Jeopardy. Unless you're playing Jeopardy, knowing a bunch of useless facts is not going to help anybody. It's not going to help you win a championship.
I do think it's more descriptive than like predictive. I definitely do think that.
Yeah.
What is it? Causation versus correlation or, you know, like.
Right.
You know,
as you can tell, we're very mathematically inclined on this podcast.
Oh, I'm terrible. I'm absolutely terrible in math. But I just think that sometimes you become a slave to it. But I also think there's some coaches that poo-poo it and dismiss it outrightly. I think you have to have an open mind.
Right.
You know, people say, you know, talking about systems on offense and defense. And my whole thing is my system is winning. I don't care if it's 3-4, 4-3, whatever. Like, what is the best thing that we can do based on the personnel that we have versus systems that give the opposing team problems, and we'll do that. And I think that's where some guys get too tied down into, you know, going back to my language and the stats. I think there's some guys that over rely on the stats.
Right.
I think there's guys that should read more stats. You know, if it's fourth and one and their line is much better than yours, you probably shouldn't go for it. You know what I mean? Like, If you've only had success throwing the ball outside, you know, you have, it's a one play series. It's fourth and two, right?
Right.
I don't care what the average per play is. I just got to get this one play. And, you know, if the average yards per play, if it's, you know, 27 yard completion, incompletion, incompletion, and that's what you're taking to say, well, 9 yards per pass attempt. Well, I just need that one, you know what I mean? That one play. And so that's where I think the stats don't tell the whole story.
Yeah, that's I feel like we could talk about this for hours. And I mean, we kind of do because we bring it up every week and try to find the middle ground. But Vass, I can't tell you how much we appreciate you stopping by and sharing this with us and just giving your insights. And I feel like it's connected. It's connective tissue for a lot of the things we're talking about. You know, we haven't really talked to someone who's been in the position of calling a defense and has that viewpoint. Can you tell people where to find your stuff and when you drop it? Like, promo yourself. Tell everyone how they can follow you and get more of this sort of insight.
Well, you can follow my analytics Twitter account at Coach Vass, COACHVASS. You can check out my website, coachvass.com. It's basically just a central repository for the podcast, the Make Defense Great Again podcast. Wade Phillips episode dropping soon. We had Dean Pease on last week. 2021, we're going to have Jim Leonard.
Excellent.
And a bunch of really cool guys that, of course, I'm drawing a blank on right now. No, I'm kidding. We're going to have some great coaches on. And if you're interested in knowing the game on a deeper level, if you're interested in watching College All 22 clinics from some of the best coaches, it's mostly college centric. So I do want to say that up front, but a lot of the, you know, trends, especially defensively, are going from bottom up now.
Yep.
So if you want to learn, you know, we do webinars, weekly webinars. We talked about Georgia's third down coverages, which is, you know, a coverage that Belichick runs. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of carryover. you know, we've talked about defending empty. I mean, just every topic you can imagine. We have weekly webinars, bonus podcasts, stuff like that. That's patreon.com/coachvass. I'm very, you know, upfront. Like, it is very coach heavy. This is for the fan. If you're interested in that, and we do have just casual fans that aren't coaches that really want to learn, like get real in the weeds.
Right.
And it's not for everybody. I just want to say that up front. Like it's a very specific set of people that go on there. And so, and we have a Discord channel where we just draw up ideas and kick them back and forth. It's a lot of fun. So check that out. And then join Twitter. If you're not on Twitter, especially with coaching, the coaching world, you know, Twitter is a terrible cesspool, but I feel like in the coaching world, especially in some of the football, we're some of the pure football. It's not the fans are like, this guy sucks, fire him and his family. You know, you always get that. But I just find that, especially with the side of discourse I'm on for the most part, like, it's a really great place. And yeah, and if you're genuine, it's garbage in, garbage out. If you follow a bunch of garbage people, you're going to get garbage back. But I think so many people that I know don't go on Twitter because they think it's going to be like the political side or the Mariah Carey versus Ariana Grande, you know, crew fighting. Like, you know, it's like it's not like that. So join Twitter and support these guys. You guys are two of the best in the business in terms of pushing the game forward. And that's why I got involved. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to raise the level of discourse in the game. And from where it was 15 years ago to now.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Like, right. So there was none of this information was out there. And that's what I will say. Like, you know, you asked me what I think the analytics guys don't do well, but I'll say what they are doing well is they are trying to push the conversation. And you're going to be right. You're going to be wrong. Hell, I'm going to be right. I'm going to be wrong. But I think as long as you're pushing that in a direction where it's advancing the game, it's trying to deepen the understanding or find some little nooks and crannies of things that we didn't understand. I think that's good. I think it's fun to talk about. Just keep perspective, you know?
Right. Exactly.
A lot of these things you're not going to prove, like who's better. I mean, like the guys that crack me up, and I know this is not football, but like the Jordan versus LeBron guys, like nobody's ever going to win that argument. You know what I mean? Like these guys, and it's kind of funny that grown men like have their entire Twitter account dedicated to another man, or another human at all. But, you know, I think that like keep in perspective, it's all in good fun. And remember at the end of the day, like this is a game. Mm-hmm. It's serious and there's a lot of lives on the line in terms of like money and jobs and things like that. But at the end of the day, it is a game. It's supposed to be fun. So just keep perspective.
You hear that, Bills fans? I agree with
him. Yeah, Bills fans. Bill, you hear that? People who threaten to kill Steven on Twitter. Stop doing that. It's ridiculous.
Bills fans, listen, I grew up as a Dolphins fan, so I have my own take on Bills fans. They're good people. They're passionate, but sometimes when they threaten to kidnap Steven's unborn children, I get a little nervous for him.
Oh man, yeah, I agree with all that. You know, you have to keep it in perspective. But the answer is LeBron. LeBron is better than
Christ. Why did I bring this up? The answer is Shaquille O'Neal.
Thanks so much for joining us, man. We really appreciate it, and I'm sure we're going to have you on again to
please. I enjoy this.
Help us understand defense. You can. You know, when we get to the Super Bowl, we'll have you break down what we're actually looking at so we know.
All right. Deal.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. We're going to do a fantasy segment and then we'll be back to go through the week 11 games with Steven's predictions.
The counter.
All right. Heading up to New York City now. Rendezvous with our pal, Charles Curtis, our fantasy guru. What's up, man? How are you?
Are we going to talk about last week? This is like the sequel to last week's big board bet that Steven made.
Yeah, I mean, I already went in on Steven in our last show, but it's your turn to get some shots in.
Oh, but he was like 3 yards short. 3 yards short. You gave him crap for that? Come on.
I don't want a W for that. I deserve my L. I got it wrong. I should have said 77 yards.
That's the spirit, Steven. That's the
accountability.
Way that's accountability. That's like Joe Judge level accountability right there.
Are we going to fight?
No. Okay. That didn't happen, apparently. But you are going to run laps.
It happened in my heart.
Yeah, for those of you who may have missed it, Steven guaranteed that Mike Evans would get 80 yards and a touchdown. He only got 77. So
only he did get a touchdown, though.
Shame on.
No, shame on Tom Brady for missing him in the end zone like three times.
Yeah,
that's fair.
It's always fair to shame Tom Brady. Charles is here for his stud, dud, and sleeper segment. We do this most weeks. Charles writes it every week over at For the Win. You can find a more robust list there. We just focus on one player in each category, and then Steven grades it using an NFL coach. The quality of the coach is the quality of the pick. I don't know. It works. It just works.
Okay? It works.
It's our best bit easily. So Charles, start it off. Who is the stud for this week?
You know, I said this in my column. I'll say it here too. I really try not to be Captain Obvious and be like, oh, like Devonta Adams is going to be a stud this week. But when it comes to like Lamar Jackson, he hasn't been necessarily stud-like all season. Yeah, I looked this up. He's QB9 right now in terms of rankings. By the way, it's Teddy Bridgewater. It's QB10. It's kind of crazy.
Cool.
Anyway,
wow.
Lamar Jackson not really living up to where people were drafting him, which is my yearly reminder. Do not draft quarterbacks very high in fantasy. Anyway, the point here is this is the week I think the Ravens offense gets right. They're facing a Titans defense that isn't very good, has proven that they are really vulnerable against the pass. Obviously, we know Jackson tends to run at least like 50 yards a game. So adding to that, I think he ends up having a good day through the air, and he will be stud-like this week and hopefully for the rest of the season for those who have him on the team.
Yeah, I think that's a good pick. I'll give it to Belichick. I know I've been generous with the Belichicks, but I'll give this one to Belichick. And I know the Titans gave him issues in the playoff game, but he still like racked up like 400 yards.
Right.
Like, it was a good fantasy day. And Dean Pease isn't there anymore. They don't have the same defensive coordinator, so maybe the game plan isn't as good. And I could see Lamar going off on a bad defense.
Charles, who's your dud?
Let's talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He hasn't carried the ball for the Chiefs more than 10 times a game in the last three games. Chiefs are coming off a bye. They're facing the Raiders, who aren't. They're pretty good against the run, I would say. And I'm wondering if you can even try to start him with confidence. I don't think you can. I think, right, like there's a possibility coming off the bye. Maybe Andy Reid wants to feed him the ball a little more. But Le'Veon Bell is still there. If I have him on my team, I'm benching him. And even in good matchups, I'm sort of worried about him, even in this running back starved universe. So he is a dud. You watch. Now this is a guy who could go off for like 150 yards, and I'm going to regret that.
So have we like officially decided how to pronounce the last name? Is it you, like, do you pronounce the H or do you not?
I think it's Helaire because I've seen him pronounce it. And I think it's Helaire.
Okay. All right. I don't even want to like saying his name is just too hard. So I'm just not going to use it, but I'm going to give this one I'll give it to Mike Tomlin. It's a good pick. I can't give you another Belichick, but apparently Andy Reid was like mad at how much the Raiders were celebrating the last time they beat the Chiefs. So I could see him like going for vengeance and just letting Mahomes throw 50 times and keep throwing it even if they're up late in the fourth quarter. So not good for a running back. I mean, he might be on the receiving end of some of those passes, but I don't think you're going to see a lot of running production.
I'm trying to picture Andy Reid getting vengeance. Like, he doesn't have like a vengeful face.
No.
So,
but those are the guys you got to worry about.
And the sleeper for the week, Charles.
Let's talk about Jameis Winston.
That's new.
Yes.
I'm actually eating a W right this instant. Oh. It's delicious. Whoa. It's delicious.
What do you take your W's with? A condiment? Like, do you have any like Chick-fil-A sauce?
Sriracha. I put sriracha on it. Nice. A little spicy. My double's got to be a little spicy.
Spicy W.
Besides awkward celebrations, I like the matchup. Obviously, it's against the Falcons. I do have concerns about Taysom Hill cutting in a little bit. but not enough. I just think, and by the way, you can ridicule me for this. I did write a thing this week about how Taysom Hill, if it's set up that he was going to be more of a quarterback for the Saints week, if you are in leagues like an ESPN where he has tight end eligibility, like you got to start him at tight end, because if he puts up quarterback numbers at tight end, you win your week. That being said, I don't think he's going to cut in with Jameis Winston. I think Winston, you know, he's got, it's not like it is, it was for him in Tampa Bay, where he's going to throw 50 times, throw three interceptions, but then throw for 400 yards. It's a little more conservative. It's a little more run heavy with Alvin Kamara. I think he ends up having a really good day, top 10 kind of quarterback kind of day. And those of you who picked him up, I think he's going to be good.
I'm going to give this one Adam Gase.
Oh,
not because it's a bad pick. Like Jameis, I think he's going to have a great day. I'm doing it for two reasons. One, way too much Taysom Hill talk. That is not allowed on this podcast. And then number two, Jameis should be in the stud category. He's not a sleeper. He's a stud. He's one of the, he's an elite quarterback. How about that? Adam Gase, for disrespecting Jameis and respecting Taysom Hill.
Here's my thing. I agree with you about Taysom Hill, but Sean Payton keeps using him, even though everyone says stop.
You know, see, this is just more Taysom Hill talk. We're over our limit. You get one Taysom Hill sentence per podcast.
Steven, are you making another guarantee? Is there a guarantee?
Yeah, I guarantee Taysom Hill will never be a starter in the NFL.
How about will he be rich because
well he already is.
Yeah, that's already happened.
What, he gets 16 million guaranteed?
I don't even want to think about it. We just keep talking about him. It's like a virus.
Just keeps spreading. Just keeps going. Charles, thanks for stopping by, man. We always appreciate you having the time to share some fantasy wisdom, and we will catch up with you again next week.
My pleasure. I hope I eat more W.
Go eat much on the W. Just have a W snack. Talk to you later.
The Counter.
So should we ban Charles for talking so much about Taysom Hill?
yeah.
Just get rid of him.
Yeah, we can't have that around. He's a bad culture fit.
we would never have Taysom Hill on our team. Certainly not at that.
No, just people that talk about him. Taysom Hill is welcome. It's just the people that talk about
him. Oh man, I love that segment. All right, we're going to talk about some games for the week. It is I kind of think maybe the best game is tonight. We're recording this Thursday afternoon. I don't know when it's going to come out. Our timeline's a little bit pushed back because of our guest schedule, but the Seahawks Cardinals rematches, I'm pretty hyped about that.
Yeah, it's a good game, and I think we're going to get some answers to some questions we had coming out of last week about the Seahawks. Will they be letting Russ cook? The improvements to the defense in the second half of that Rams game, will it carry over, and maybe the defense can pick up some momentum against a tough test in the Cardinals, who have, they've had some success against Seattle. They had a lot of success in the first matchup. So it's really interesting. And I think this is like an elimination game for the NFC West, maybe.
It's a huge one. I mean, like I told you earlier, I was offended. Like I had we've had a busy week, so I failed to like look at the schedule and really comprehend the schedule. And then I looked today and I was like offended that a great game was on Thursday night. Yeah. Like, you got to warn me, NFL. You got to make, I got to make sure I can set aside the time.
That's what the AFC South is for. Keep those guys in on Thursday.
And the NFC East. The NFC East should play on Wednesdays.
They should play Tuesdays and compete with Maction.
Yeah, it should be Maction. That's exactly where I was going. So that game will be wonderful. I'm sure we'll talk about the Cardinals Seahawks in our next show. Whatever happens, we're going to take a lot of things away from it. But otherwise, there are three games that I am most intrigued by. Ravens Titans, which is a divisional round rematch from last year where the Titans got the better of the Ravens. Packers Colts, which is just two teams that they feel like they're in similar spots for opposite reasons. The Packers defense is not very good, and the Colts offense has struggled at times. So I don't, you know, I think That's an interesting one. And then Chiefs Raiders, purely because the Raiders somehow beat the Chiefs earlier this year. And we've already talked about vengeful Andy Reid on this show. So I don't know what other analysis we're going to get into on that game. But those are the three that really, really intrigue me. But let's start with Ravens Titans. And, you know, we got into this a little bit with the fantasy segment. But the Ravens, there's a lot of concern in Baltimore. There's tons of concern that this team is not going to turn the corner. And I think you've been one of the more steadfast analysts when it comes to the Ravens, thinking that that offense we saw last year can reemerge. But we've also talked a ton about Greg Roman's having this problem everywhere he's been, that people catch up to Greg Roman's and he does not really adjust. So what are we looking at for this game?
Yeah, the Roman thing is still a concern, but right. I have to ask, are we sure we're not already in the process of the Ravens turning around? Because you look back at the second half of that Colts game, the offense looked good. Mm-hmm. I thought the passing game was fine against the Patriots, but it's really hard to take anything away from that game because of the rain and how it affected both offenses. But Lamar looked fine passing the ball last Sunday night. So maybe they've already figured it out. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, I think this game again is, it's going to be hard to really judge the Ravens offense because it feels like the defense is going to have some trouble stopping the Titans run game. Calais Campbell remains questionable. Brandon Williams remains questionable. I mean, those are two guys who clog up things in the middle for the Ravens. You noted that they made the adjustment to missing those two guys and stopped the Patriots pretty well in the second part of their game last week. But I mean, those are just huge losses for this team. It's just, this defense isn't going to be anywhere near what it could be without.
And that's guys. And that's a lot easier to do when you don't have to worry about the downfield passing game because of the rain. So if there's normal weather conditions, you're not going to have that advantage. So maybe they won't be able to use the same strategies they use against the Patriots in the second half.
Right, right. I mean, I was surprised. I think Patrick Queen, the rookie linebacker out of LSU, who you really liked and was really, really good early in the season, I feel like he got exposed a little bit last week. And that's, I mean, he just has to fight through so much more without those two guys in front of him. You know, it's just, you could just see the ways that the defense was struggling because it was unsure in certain places where it usually was. And guys were having to fill in. Jimmy Smith is also questionable. I'm looking at the Ravens injury report here now. So, you know, they're going to have some trouble on the defensive side, I think. What are you looking for out of the Titans? What sort of things, you know, are we trying to evaluate as we go forward with this team?
On one side of the ball, on offense, you're looking at if the passing game can operate if the running game doesn't work. But as you pointed out, it's probably going to work. So you won't have to see Ryan Tannehill play quarterback a whole lot. But if there are those situations, he's going up against like one of the nastiest defenses on third down. So it's really going to test him. And I just want to see if he can, you know, put up good numbers when he has to be put in those situations.
Yeah, that's it's so funny to talk about Tannehill as like someone who we're still learning about because he's like well into his 30s and it's a really unique NFL career for a quarterback that, you know, he feels somehow fresh and new and he's not at all, you know, and if he really would have been able to do these things at a high level, he would have been put in a position to do them at a much earlier date. But yeah, this right. narrative just persists. We just cannot get rid of it. The Ravens are actually a 5.5-point favorite here, which I think surprised some people. What's your take on this one?
I think that sounds about right. I would take the Ravens. I do want to see if the Titans are able to carry over that game plan they had in the playoff game to this game. Obviously, Dean Pease isn't there, and he's the one calling the plays. So right. that's something to watch out for, too. Like, does this coaching staff still have that ability to scheme up a game plan that will stop a player like Lamar Jackson? I'm doubtful they do.
Are you worried at all about the Nick Boyle injury for the Ravens? That feels like one that one of these classic, like, most people are going to overlook it, and it ends up having a huge impact on a team. Because, I mean, he was a really good blocking tight end. So I feel like that the reverberations of that are probably more than people realize.
Yeah, and he's a guy they use in the backfield, and they move him around a lot. He's like their chess piece. So, yeah, I could see it having the same impact that Kyle Juszczyk's injury last year had on the 49ers offense. And it may take some time to adjust and figure out ways to coach around it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think they're bringing in a couple other tight ends to see if they how that works. They have Patrick Ricard. You know, they have guys who they might move into that that sort of multiple position spot. But I just don't think it's going to be anywhere near as effective as Nick Boyle was on a regular down-to-down basis.
I will say that that's not like a valued type of player, so maybe it will be easier to find a replacement than if it was like a guy like Lamar, obviously, who's so unique.
Yeah, tough to replace Lamar Jackson. Right. That's the sort of analysis you come to the counter. Hard hitting, guys.
All right.
Lamar Jackson might be more valuable than Nick Boyle.
Let's go to this Packers-Colts game. If the Green Bay loses Aaron Rodgers, would that be bad? The Packers-Colts, you know, the Packers are 7-2, and we have pretty much written them off completely because the defense just feels so not good. And we're basing that off them struggling to beat the Jags last week and not really stopping a QB who has no business being in the league, whereas Philip Rivers has a lot of business being not only in the NFL but in the Hall of Fame someday. So this will be a little bit of a different challenge for the Packers. The Colts are a 1.5-point favorite here, which is interesting. The game's in Indianapolis, but how do you see this one shaking out?
I think I would pick the Colts because their defense is, I've been over this before, it's so well coached and so disciplined, and you're going up against an offense that is really built on deception, like with play action and motions before the snap, and they're trying to play with the defense's eyes. And I don't know if they're going to be able to do that against the Colts, and it's not like they have the talent to just beat the Colts either. Right. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers is good and Devontae Adams is good, but outside of that, they don't really have guys that I think can unlock the Colts coverage. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be a big Rodgers to Adams type of game. And then on the other side, I don't have any faith in that defense slowing down Indy's run game. And Indy's run game hasn't been that good. And that's kind of what's held back this offense, but it kind of broke out last week against the Titans. So maybe they have that momentum building. And if they can run on the Packers, I think it just makes Philip Rivers' job so much easier.
Right. If I were a good and conscientious podcast host and NFL writer, I would have looked this up way ahead of time, but I'm just going to bring it up now, pretend I don't know the answer, but that you might, and throw it on you and make you look bad. So I'm wondering, like, the Rodgers Devontae Adams thing, this has to be one of the most tilted offenses in history, right? I mean, he's got 61 catches. The next closest is Aaron Jones, who is 28. You know, those are all probably little swing passes. Robert Tonyan has 27. I mean, like, this is, it's just like Adams has 741 yards compared to Marquez Valdes-Scantling has 463. I mean, like, defenses must just know that like, there's a 50% chance that the ball is going to one receiver. Like,
right. Both those guys are so good that it doesn't matter if they know. Like, you watch them on third down and you could tell the defense knows who's getting the ball and they still can't stop it. And the Colts don't really have a defense that's built to double team receivers. So that's the one reason I would back the Packers here in this matchup. So I don't know if they're going to be able to take out Adams. It's just maybe let him, you know, put up his numbers and just stop everyone else. And you might be able to outscore the Packers defense, which is bad.
Right. What do you mean by that? It's not built to double team. It's just like whatever they do doesn't really allow for that.
Right. Cause you basically have to play man coverage to really bracket a guy. And they're playing a lot of zone. So guys have to be in certain spots. It's hard to double someone and also play zone defense. Cause you're taking a guy out of coverage. So there's, in theory, a hole in the zone elsewhere.
Right. All right. So you're picking the Colts in this one. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm going to take the Colts.
All right. And then finally, the Chiefs Raiders is another one that I want to dig in on a little bit, purely just because the Raiders did something to beat the Chiefs the first time around. And the Raiders have continued to win games. I mean, I know that we show them essentially no respect whatsoever, but you know, they are continuing to win games. They're finding a way. They're going to be in the playoff chase. Like, they're going to linger around at 6-3. What is there anything that could happen again? And this time it's in Las Vegas, but yet the Chiefs are an 8-point favorite. Is there anything that makes you think the Chiefs have solved whatever hurt them last time, or was last time purely a fluke? Like, how do we assess this one? This is the Sunday night game, by the way.
Yeah, I think it's just not committing penalties on offense. And they obviously had problems on defense. And there was a lot of coverage busts. I think I did a cut up of their deep shots in that game, and it was really just them messing with the Chiefs' coverages and breaking them, basically breaking their rules. And I have confidence that the Chiefs coaching staff is going to look at the film from that game, figure out what went wrong, and then fix the problem. So I really don't think it's going to be a repeat. I don't think the Chiefs are going to commit like 10 penalties again. And I don't think they're going to give up a bunch of long passes to Derek Carr.
Yeah. That seems unlikely. It was 10 penalties for 94 yards last time the Chiefs gave up. I think they were timely too. I'm not remembering.
And the 94 yards doesn't include the plays they negated. Like, one of those plays was like a 60 yard touchdown.
That's what I mean. Yeah. I mean, because the Raiders had 8 penalties for 59 yards. So, you know, they had almost as many penalties, but the yardage was less. And then, of course, it depends on when they happen within the game. You know, that really matters. So how far out ahead are the Chiefs of the rest of the league at this point? I mean, this is a narrative that we've had now for a couple weeks where we really think the Chiefs are easily the best team, most well-rounded team, most dynamic team. But, you know, as you assess coming off last week, how far ahead are they?
They're like two tiers above everyone else, I feel like.
Wow.
I don't even like, this is how I would explain it. I think the team that has the best chance of beating them is still Baltimore. Mm. Even with Baltimore not playing at its best, I still think they are the only ones with enough talent to beat that team. And we know that Baltimore just is a horrible matchup for them. So basically, I don't think anyone can challenge them. Like, what team would it be? Maybe the Saints have a chance. The Seahawks, just because Russell Wilson could play out of his mind. But
what about the Steelers? Steelers and their MVP candidate, Ben.
The Steelers do have a chance, because I think they do have a lot of success with blitzing, but they don't need to blitz to be good on defense. They've shown that.
Okay.
So I just don't know if they have the secondary to match up with the Chiefs receivers, and their pass rush is good, but I don't think we could just rush for down after down and get pressure down after down good.
Right. Yeah. That feels exactly right. Like, they're just not quite there. And, you know, the Ravens would need to be healthy to even have.
Right.
That's been a problem, too. All right, let's kick through the rest of the league here. What else we got going on? The Falcons and Saints. You know, obviously, we are going to see some Jameis Winston. And you wrote this week that you predict the Saints will be fine without Drew Brees, and that, you know, as we noted in the last show, Teddy Bridgewater had to jump into the middle of a game last year when Brees went out, and it did not go super well. And then, you know, you have a week of preparation and a week of adjusting the offense to the quarterback you have. And from there on out, Bridgewater looked pretty good. I mean, he went 5-0 and sort of managed things. Now, Jameis Winston is a much different sort of QB not only than Bridgewater, but than Breeze. So I think it's a larger adjustment, but it seems to me that you think they'll be able to make that adjustment and that this will work.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm kind of just speculating because, like you said, it's a different type of adjustment. Like even when Luke McCown had to play a couple years ago, that's you're still scheming for a similar quarterback who's going to check the ball down. And Jameis is just some guy you have to rein in. And if you can rein him in and keep the big plays, which I do think is possible, then this offense could be even more explosive.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about it for months now. We've wanted to see Jameis in this offense. We've wanted to see Sean Payton have a guy like Jameis Winston to call around. This sort of matchup that I think if you're a football person, you're just like wondering, okay, well, that's going to be interesting.
And one of the questions with Breeze has been, like, is he throwing short because he can only throw short, or is it because the personnel dictates that, the receiver personnel, like they don't have a deep threat?
Right.
And we're going to find out with Jameis.
Jameis is going to send someone deep no matter what.
Right.
He's going to eat a W and then tell someone.
He's throwing downfield no matter what, even if it has to be to a safety on the other team.
Sometimes that's preferable when you're Jameis. You know, you gotta keep it spicy.
It's better than throwing to a linebacker, I'll say that.
The Falcons are absolutely putrid. We know that. So Jameis's numbers are probably going to look okay, right? I think it seems likely that he's going to play the Falcons twice. I don't know what the latest is on Breeze. I saw somewhere saying that it could be only 2 weeks, but I feel like if a guy's lung collapses, maybe just, I don't know, be conservative about it. Go 4 or 5 weeks. Let him rest a little bit.
I don't know. If Jameis is playing well, Drew might be like, yeah, I got to get back out there. Like, I feel like I remember him doing that with Teddy. Like, there was questions if he was going to play the 1 week he came back. I think it was against the Cardinals, maybe. Right. And yeah, he's like, Teddy had just played well against the Bears the week before. And he's like, yeah, I got to get my job back. I'm picking the Saints, though. I think this is a good test for the Saints defense, which has played a lot better of late. The Bucs game was really good, obviously. They gave up, what, 3 points?
Right.
And the Falcons do have a good offense. Right. It's not a great offense, which it had to be to carry this defense, but it is a good offense and a test.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the Falcons offense is getting some respect. The line here is 5. New Orleans is favored by 5. So that's a fair amount of respect, I think, for a Falcons team that's 3-6.
It's probably a Jameis Winston throwing interceptions thing, too. That helps the other offense. And remember, the Falcons were the team that got his 30th interception. So a little vengeance for Jameis.
All right.
Maybe he'll eat another W if they pull out the win.
We're all eating W's on Wednesday or on Sunday night if this goes right. We're going to feast on some W's on this podcast. Eagles-Browns. This feels like a game that the Eagles will win because the Eagles were absolutely horrific against the Giants. Now everyone in Philadelphia is ready for them to tank, and they're just going to go like completely stop Baker Mayfield because that's just how these things go. The Browns are a 3-point favorite.
Yeah, it's like the Eagles are like a crappy version of the Patriots. Like they play well and they're like, it's like the we're on the Cincinnati thing that happened. Like this is the Browns are their Cincinnati. And I agree with you. I think they're going to end up winning this game. Just seems like I have no analysis and no reason to back that up. Just maybe like their defensive line is good. They might get a pass rush and Baker Mayfield's not great under pressure. So that's their avenue to winning.
Yeah. Just feels like it's going to go that way. Meanwhile, the Bengals coming off a loss, dropping to 2-6. I mean, Joe Burrow keeps pushing along, but they are visiting the football team of Washington D.C. and Alex Smith and the football team are a 1.5-point favorite here.
Yeah, the Bengals are – that fan base is my new enemy. I had to get a new one because the lock war has been won. I'm eating the W on that one. Oh. So I've moved on to the Bengals and their baby-armed quarterback. But Washington's defense has been kind of good, and their offense just looks fine with Alex Smith back. Like, he looks like a normal quarterback again. We're not so worried about the leg, although that could go bad at any moment.
We should be, though.
Yeah. But Yeah, so I might take Washington in this. They're not out of the NFC East race, by the way. And based on the Ben Baldwin's tiers, his little chart he puts out, Washington right. is the best team in the NFC East.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize. I mean, I've stopped like seeing anything about the NFC East. Like my eyes, I'm just blind to it. So I must have missed that. But
the chart is really funny, by the way. It's like the Jets are just on their own island of suckiness. And then the NFC East is kind of clustered together. They're all right. together just in just the mediocre zone. And then the Bears and Broncos are kind of like orbiting the NFC East.
That tells you all you need to know. I feel like Terry McLaurin is one of the most underrated players in the game, or one of the most unheralded. He's regular.
Right. He's a legit number one, and he's doing this with like, this is like DeAndre Hopkins early in his career, like putting up numbers with just crappy quarterbacks.
Right.
Not that I don't think a healthy Alex Smith is a decent quarterback, but it's like one leg Alex Smith, and he's putting up numbers still.
Right. I love watching McLaurin. I mean, I think he's just such a just really exciting player that, and I mean, I go in each week thinking like, he's not going to put up numbers. And he does. He just finds a way. Because he's not nearly the physical freak that Hopkins is. Like,
right.
I think you sort of expect it. McLaurin's like 6 foot, played in the Big Ten. Like, those guys aren't supposed to be exciting.
But that's the crazy thing about Hopkins is like, no one realizes he's only 6'1". He just plays like he's like 6'5".
He's just an absolute monster, one that I would trade for a running back if I could. seems like a great idea. what do you think Bill O'Brien was doing last week when everyone started roasting him? There was like a lot of speculation on Twitter about that. Like, what was he doing when DeAndre Hopkins made that catch?
He's probably in the middle of his like pilgrimage to PFF. He's like going to follow the Mike McCarthy path and be like, look, guys, I've changed. I realize that running backs don't matter.
I feel like maybe he was calling Michigan. He was calling the Michigan AD and like, hey, do you remember when I was a good college coach? Do you remember that?
Right.
I know how to coach in college.
But if he wants to get back in the NFL, he just needs to like start tweeting out nerd things like running backs don't matter. Momentum isn't a thing. And they'll all jump on his bandwagon and he'll get hired again. That's the way.
Love it.
I should be his agent.
You should be. That'd probably be a more lucrative job than this one. Lions, Panthers. And I'm noticing that there's no line on this game. And I don't know why. I guess it's because Teddy Bridgewater might be hurt.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah. But, you know, the Lions are 4-5, Panthers 3-7. I don't know. They're going to play football.
Two bad defenses. So it's right. basically who do you trust to take advantage of the bad defense? And I have to put my Joe faith Brady. In Joe Brady.
Yeah, of course.
Going up against the worst defense in the league by EPA, I think that's the case.
Matt Patricia's defense is the worst. Wow.
It's either the worst or like the second or third worst. It's really bad. But the Panthers isn't much better, so.
That's insane.
It's going to be a Big 12 game.
Steelers remain undefeated, 9-0. Very likely to go to 10-0, playing the Jags. Have to visit Jacksonville. Jaguars are 1-8. Pittsburgh is a 10-point favorite. You know, you and I had a brief discussion. You noticed last week while watching Ben Roethlisberger, you know, Roethlisberger had a close COVID contact and so was not able to practice leading into last week's game. And then they played the Bengals and you noticed that Roethlisberger's arm really jumped. Now, that could be because he was throwing in the same game as baby arm Burrow, but it also could be that he was able to rest. And he actually apparently brought that up with Mike Tomlin this week and said, maybe I should rest some more. And Tomlin pulled like the tough guy coach thing and said like, I'll see you at practice Thursday. But like, they should let Ben Roethlisberger's old, man. He's old. They should let his arm rest.
Even if he wasn't coming off major surgery, like right. let him rest. It's not even just so he plays better in the next game. It's so he's good for the playoffs.
Right. Like, Ben Roethlisberger is my age. Like he should be resting. I should be like, I rest between these podcast sessions. I have to go like lay down for a little bit. Like it's hard. You think Pittsburgh will cover on this one?
Yes, but this is also like the type of game the Steelers always lose. Like every season they have one of these games where they should just blow out a team and they end up losing. It's usually like on the road to a team in Florida. So maybe funny. They, but I can't pick Jake Luton. I'm sorry.
It's tough. It's tough. This is your trap game, Steelers. Don't.
But the Jags are probably want to lose the game. So
yeah, that race for Justin Fields, and the Jets could accidentally win this week. I mean, they're playing the Chargers, so
the Chargers will find a way to lose that game.
Yeah, I mean they're generally pretty good at it, but let's do Patriots Texans next. Patriots are a 2-point favorite. This game is in Houston, though. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the Patriots seem to be back on the right track, seem to be building toward a successful end of the season, and the Texans are the Texans.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing the Patriots losing this game, even if Deshaun Watson is brilliant,
right. Which
I'm not ruling out because he's been really good against the Patriots in his career. But their defense is just a mess. It's just so poorly coached, and you don't want to bring a poorly coached defense up against a coach like Josh McDaniels, who he seems to have figured things out. The Patriots offense has been like number three in EPA over the last 2 or 3 weeks. So,
right.
And Cam Newton's been one of the highest graded quarterbacks by PFF. So this offense seems to have turned things around. They're just playing low possession games. So they're not scoring a ton of points, but like their efficiency and how much they're scoring per drive is they're really good at that. So I don't know if you take out those three games that the COVID situation messed with,
right.
Two games where Cam really couldn't practice, and then the Chiefs game where Cam didn't play, their offense is like a top 10 offense. I think it's actually top five by EPA. If you just look at those, what is it? Six games.
Right.
So I don't know.
It's wild. Yeah. I mean, who knew that the pandemic would also interrupt the flow of football teams. I guess we should have seen that coming.
I love how like a few weeks ago after the 49ers game, everyone was like, is Cam Newton hurt? Like he has to be hurt. How about he just had a disease that we know nothing about,
right,
and couldn't practice for 2 weeks? Like the most obvious explanation was there.
Right. Yeah, it's not as much fun to talk about though. So Dolphins, Broncos, Miami is only a 3.5-point favorite in this one. Man, it feels like the Dolphins defense is going to just toy with Drew Locke.
I mean, well, we don't know which Drew Locke is going to play because Drew Locke has been hurt this week. Okay. So it could be a Drew Locke 2.0, but that's why we call them all Drew Locks, because it doesn't matter. The same thing's going to happen no matter who's back there.
Yeah, it's you see the Dolphins covering this?
What was the line again?
3.5.
Although I wouldn't be surprised if it's a close game. That defense might give Tua some problems just because Vic Fangio is
right. A
good coach, but they're a little banged up on defense, so I don't know. I think the Dolphins win.
Jets, Chargers. What was Justin Herbert thinking with that haircut?
I don't know, but I hope it doesn't affect his play. Although, like, now I'm like off the hook, because if he ends up being a bust, I could be like, it's the haircut.
I mean, the locks were magic, man. Why would you just not let the flow go?
I cannot wait for like in like 4 weeks, we're going to get splits between when he had the haircut and when he like that's we're going to get that. And those can go either way. Either like the guy like just totally falls off a cliff or his stats get even better.
Well,
there's no in between.
I know one person who needs to be paying close attention, and that's future New York Jet Trevor Lawrence, who has probably the best flow, I'm going to say it, in the history of football.
So
he needs to pay close attention and see what happens here and consider it for his own future career. It's probably the most important thing he can do from here until the draft.
There was like a photo going around on Twitter, and it showed, I think it was Zach Wilson, but it showed what they would look like if Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence switched haircuts. And I just want to say, Trevor Lawrence didn't look great.
He
looked like a Simpsons character.
He's got his signature look, and he needs to keep it.
Yeah,
that's where we're coming down on it. Cowboys Vikings is the other Sunday afternoon game, along with Packers, Colts, Jets, Chargers, Dolphins, Broncos. You, a couple weeks ago, picked the Vikings to make the playoffs, and they continue to make you look like you know what you're talking about. And they are a 7-point favorite here against the lowly Cowboys. I guess Andy Dalton's back. Is that right? Did I see that?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to matter, but it's better than Garrett Gilbert.
They're going to score 7 points instead of six. Yeah, I think the Vikings cover. Their defense is coming around. I mean, it could have just been the Bears' defense or Bears' offense.
Right.
Yeah, but I thought Mike Zimmer had his mojo back with the blitzes. They're really giving Nick Foles problems. And one thing you would think Nick Foles would be good at is like recognizing things pre-snap. So I don't know. You would think you'd be able to call out those blitzes, but the fact that Zimmer fooled him is a good sign.
Are you telling me Nick Foles is something of an enigma? Is wildly, wildly inconsistent?
We're still going to be talking about if Nick Foles is good in like 20 years.
Man, I hope not. I hope we're just talking about the legacy of Taysom Hill. How we should remember him. And that's it. Rams Bucks is the Monday night game. That's a good one. That's a fun one. We'll talk about that on our show that drops Monday morning. We'll review everything from Sunday. That's all the time we got for this week. Want to thank Coach Vass once again for sharing his wisdom. Fascinating conversation. And we will be on the internet on Sunday. You'll find us at For the Win, ftw.usatoday.com. Obviously, we'll be posting there. And on Twitter, he's at the Stephen Ruiz. I'm at Chris Corman. So join us there. Join us for the next show. Stephen, how should we close it out, man?
This might be like, I don't know, it might come off as desperate, but I feel like I should have won DeAndre Hopkins meme contest.
Did he announce a winner?
Yeah, at one point he tweeted out Tom Brady won, which is just that's so cheap.
Come on.
Give it to me.
Tom Brady could like – Tom Brady has all the money in the world. Why does he need a cool jersey?
Yeah, I don't even know if it's like ethical for me to take the jersey, but I'm taking it. I don't care.
I mean, it would not be, but
– if that's like the worst thing on my journalism Wikipedia page, then I mean, I did something right. Maryland grads have done worse.
Yeah, Jason Blair was a Maryland grad. I don't that reference probably went over everyone's head.
Yeah,
you can look it up. He has a Wikipedia page.
He does.
Right now, the worst thing in your Wikipedia page is the time that you guaranteed Mike Evans.
Oh God,
got 77. So it's rough. It's rough, Steven. Thanks for joining us, guys. Take care, and we will talk to you next time.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.